This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have Dr. Tom Woods with us today. Tom is a senior fellow at the Mises Institute, author of 8 books, editor or co-editor of 4 others, and his most recent book that he does with Murray Polner and the great peace activist Murray Polner, P-O-L-N-E-R. Take a look at his archive on LouRockwell.com, as well as, of course, Tom Woods' archive. But this book that they've edited, an extremely important work. It's called We Who Dared to Say No to War, American Anti-War Writings from 1812 to Now. Tom, this is really an extraordinary collection.
Well, thanks a lot, Lou. Murray and I got to know each other back when I was living on Long Island, and we had both taught at the same institution, he many years earlier, and we had read each other's writing, and by and large, through LouRockwell.com. So LouRockwell.com really gave birth to this, what I think, as you say, is an important project, and I can say that freely without fearing that I'm going to sound like some conceited jerk, because the material in it is by and large not written by me, but written by some of the most interesting people in American history. And what we've done is Murray and I have gone through all the major wars, and of course we regret so much not being able to cover some of the minor wars, but just length and space considerations unfortunately had to win out. But we go from 1812 all the way to the present. So 1812, Mexican War, so-called Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Cold War, Vietnam, Iraq, and the present. And we take the best and oftentimes most neglected but yet interesting, compelling, original, dramatic, devastating writings in terms of articles, book excerpts, poetry, speeches, whatever, opposing each one of these wars, written by contemporaries. So it's the people who struggled at the time with war as we struggle now. And we thought this would be a valuable thing, because what we're doing is bringing people of all different perspectives together. I mean, you've got a book here in which, it's true, we've got Howard Zinn in this book. We also have Pat Buchanan. And Murray and I don't agree with everything in the book, but in a way, that's kind of what makes it interesting. It's lively, it's got a lot of perspectives. But what these people agree on, by and large, is, you know, mass murder might have a moral dimension to it that we need to talk about. And it seems to me that a lot of American classrooms and American culture in general is fascinated with war. They want to focus on the great war speeches delivered by the presidents. And, well, we want to speak about the great anti-war speeches that everybody's forgotten about. And, you know, what's interesting, by the way, about this, Lou, is that as the project was going on, I think Murray himself, who's 80, became more radicalized as the project went on. Because initially, you know, we had a little bit of a stumbling block with the war between the states, because I think Murray's view was that ultimately, as regrettable as it was, that war probably just had to be fought out. But by the end of the project, and so by the way, I was willing to concede that in our little introduction to that chapter, that we have a disagreement among ourselves. You know, we're not clones or robots. That's fine. But by the end, he said, you know what, I've been thinking about it. And he said, obviously slavery was going to end. You know, I mean, it ended everywhere else in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, for heaven's sake, there obviously had to be a way to resolve this without having 1.5 million people dead, wounded, or missing. You know, he just came to this sort of elementary conclusion, but yet really a radical conclusion, and a conclusion that is far out of our so-called mainstream, although why anyone in this rotten, corrupt system would want to be in the so-called mainstream is a good question.
Tom, one of the things I like about this book is that the two editors come from the left and from the right. Murray Polner, the longtime head of the Jewish Peace Fellowship, longtime peace activist and a man of the left. You, a libertarian and in some senses a man of the right, certainly the old right, can come together on this most important of issues because you have Randolph Bourne in here and his famous comment that war is the health of the state. Our own Murray Rothbard always held that war and foreign policy was the absolute key issue for anyone interested in the cause of human liberty. This, of course, war is when the state is able to suppress internal dissent, when it's able to make any differences with itself seem unpatriotic and maybe even irreligious sometimes, when its military industries grow and fatten, when the state itself gets sleek and happy. And I think partly because the kinds of people who go into the state like killing. I mean, they actually enjoy the idea of sending the bombers, sending the ships, sending the planes, sending the troops. actually, there are unfortunately people in the world who like that sort of thing, and they tend to gravitate towards politics. So wonderful to see this pincer movement from the good left and the good right coming at this most important of issues.
Well, we were very happy about that, too. We felt like our collaboration on this project sort of embodies the very sort of trend we'd like to foster. We'd like to foster, you know, respectful communication among people who have a principled stand against war. And it's interesting to me that although, as I say, there are some selections in here that I in which I find myself not entirely in agreement, but that I still nevertheless respect. For example, Helen Keller and Eugene Debs. It's hard not to respect Debs at some level for his heroism in standing up against the war. But at the same time, when you look at Randolph Bourne, and most people, myself included, were familiar with Bourne only from his maxim, "War is the health of the state," he would be considered to be part of the progressive movement, and if you had to pigeonhole him, he'd probably be on the left. But I'm telling you, I defy anyone on the right or any libertarian reading the selection from Randolph Bourne that we've included to find anything to disagree with. I mean, he's got an incredibly penetrating analysis of what happens during wartime, what happens to the state, what happens to society, and it's really one of the most persuasive and astonishing pieces of analysis I've ever read. So, and by the way, Lou, I also want to point out about this project that it's not simply that we've brought together people who were great orators and delivered wonderful speeches. We have done that to some degree, but it's not just that they have a way with words. It's also that a lot of these contributors, their content is so fantastic. Their content is so valuable because they look at each one of these wars specifically and explain. They get into why the war is wrong, why we've been lied to about it, what the propaganda is, what they're trying to feed us and what the truth is, all the suppressed truths around these wars that the regime didn't want to get out, they all get out here. So if there's any one of these conflicts that in your own mind you've thought, you know, I wonder what was really going on there, what was this really all about? Well, that's disclosed here too. So it's a very, very satisfying read. I have a lot of collections of writings on my shelf that are collecting dust because I use them just as reference works. But I honestly think this collection could be read from cover to cover with great profit and pleasure.
Tom, it's absolutely true. It's one of the great things about this book is that you do bring back these forgotten writers. And Randolph Bourne, I mean, a lot of times it's Murray Rothbard is the reason we know about these people, like Randolph Bourne or Lysander Spooner or many other figures of interest to libertarians. But the most politically incorrect position you can ever take in your life is to oppose the current war, whatever that war is. And you are suppressed at the time, and you were certainly suppressed by the normal historians. Now, of course, you're an historian, but you're not the normal historian. You're actually interested in the truth, and you understand economics, and you understand the evil of war as well as the inefficacy of war and the political disaster of war. But to bring all these great men and women back and to make it in such an accessible volume, and it absolutely can be read from front to back, and it's all fascinating writing. I mean, this volume, unlike many anthologies, pulls you in. I mean, there's a novelistic air to it. It's just thrilling writing. In fact, I wonder if at the end of this you would read us a couple of selections from it.
I'm quite happy to, and you'll have to, of course, restrain me from reading more because I just fallen in love with so many of these passages. But I do want to mention that Murray Rothbard is in this collection. And he's the sort of person who wouldn't normally show up in a collection like this. I mean, people wouldn't even consider putting him in because, you know, I think sometimes people who might be interested in this material tend to be more sectarian, but not Murray. Murray is very broad-minded and wants to bring together all kinds of perspectives against war. So we have in there Murray's classic essay, War, Peace, and the State, which is really one of these essays that Murray wrote that is potentially life-changing because suddenly, I mean, you'll never look at war and war propaganda the same way again. Just when you think you know all the tricks the state is up to, Murray makes you feel naive. You know, you're still naive. You still don't quite get it. It's such an astonishing thing, and that's why in one of the pieces I wrote for LouRockwell.com, I pointed out that this is the kind of book that, as a libertarian, you can enjoy, but that you can also give to, you know, that friend on the left who doesn't quite see the world the way you do, but is still opposed to war, and the person will absolutely love this book, but yet incidentally along the way get exposed to some great libertarian thinkers and writers, and that's not a bad little bonus thing.
Tom, people who want to get this book, and it's published by Basic Books, which is, congratulations, a very important publisher. So it's quite a thrill to see it having that sort of imprimatur. It's a very handsome book. It's paperback and well-priced by the standards of book publishing these days. And if you look at any of Tom's recent articles on lewrockwell.com, you'll find the cover of the book. You can click on it. It's also available through Amazon. You blogged the other day a quote from a speech of Senator Norris's, who was a progressive, about World War I. And I wonder if you'd read that.
Sure, sure. Now, Senator Norris gave a fantastic speech against World War I, and in that speech, he reflects briefly on the claim that war will bring great prosperity. So he reflects on this. He says, "To whom does war bring prosperity? Not to the soldier, who for the munificent compensation of $16 per month shoulders his musket and goes into the trench, there to shed his blood and to die if necessary. Not to the broken-hearted widow who waits for the return of the mangled body of her husband. Not to the mother who weeps at the death of her brave boy. Not to the little children who shiver with cold. Not to the babe who suffers from hunger. Nor to the millions of mothers and daughters who carry broken hearts to their graves. War brings no prosperity to the great mass of common and patriotic citizens. It increases the cost of living of those who toil and those who already must strain every effort to keep soul and body together." Well, if I may, Lou, I'd like also to share just one more, which is a passage from Russell Kirk, who was one of the great intellectuals of the post-war sort of conservative intellectual revival, and he wrote the book The Conservative Mind that has been sort of a seminal work among many conservatives. And here's Russell Kirk writing in 1954, and I'll leave it to listeners to perceive the relevance of this passage. He says, "In the present instance, we contend with an ingenuous provinciality that all the world wants to be American. Displaying an impatient perplexity which is wholly sincere, we decry as reactionary or conspiratorial or Russian-influenced anyone in foreign parts who dissents from the American way. We manifest a yawning ignorance of the venerable principle that cultural form and substance cannot be transported intact from one people to another. We claim that everyone except feudal barons or reds longs for tractors, Bob Hope, self-service laundries, direct primaries, cloverleaf intersections, high school extracurricular activities, two evening newspapers, Coca-Cola, and a stylish burial at Memory Grove Cemetery." And he goes on to say, "A handful of individuals, some of them quite unused to moral responsibilities on such a scale, made it their business to extirpate the populations of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We must make it our business to curtail the possibility of such snap decisions, taken simply on the assumptions of worldly wisdom. And the conservative can urge upon his nation a policy of patience and prudence. A preventive war, whether or not it might be successful in the field, and that is a question much in doubt, would be morally ruinous to us."
Well, Russell was magnificent. I had the honor to know him, and an eloquent man, and I always regretted the long years he worked for the evil Bill Buckley, the monstrous warmonger and ex-CIA agent, maybe not so ex, who did so much to transform the conservative movement into a total warmongering juggernaut. But Russell also wrote a great article in 1949 against the draft. If you put Russell Kirk and draft into Google on lewrockwell.com, that article will come up. And I remember his last letter to me. This was back during the first Iraq War. And he wrote a P.S., and he said that George H.W. Bush should be hanged on the White House lawn for the crime of launching this war of aggression. So Russell was quite a guy.
No, he certainly was. And, of course, from the point of view of the current so-called conservative movement, these embarrassing statements of his have a way of falling down the memory hole. But that's what Google is for, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's what books like this are for. And thanks for bringing all these great men and women back and their courage and heroism in opposing the key activity of the monster state, which is war. Just one last point. You were reading up from Norris about the question of war prosperity. Mises talks about how war brings prosperity to the physician and the undertaker, but not to anyone else. Of course, also to the munitions manufacturers.
Right.
But certainly not to the population at large. I'll end with just one more thing that Lou Lehrman, who I once worked for when he was running for governor of New York, on this question of world prosperity, said, if war really does bring prosperity, but of course we don't want to kill people, he said, how about this? Let's have Japan and the United States each build the most magnificent fleet ever seen, all the most modern technology, the biggest ships, the most powerful, the biggest guns and bombs and planes, and we'll meet in the middle of the Pacific and then take all the sailors off because you don't want to hurt anybody and sink all these ships. So therefore, we could have the prosperity of war without hurting anybody. And he said, you know, you only have to stop and think about that for a moment to realize that's a slightly nutty idea. But of course, not nutty for the industries that would build the ships.
Or for the Keynesian intellectuals who would give them intellectual cover for this.
No, of course, that's exactly right. Tom Woods, thanks so much. Take a look at Tom's archive on lourockwell.com. All his articles are very much worth reading. Take a look at his 8 books, the 4 books that he's also edited. And especially, I just want to recommend, with my absolute highest recommendation, We Who Dared to Say No to War, American Anti-War Writing from 1812 to Now, edited by Murray Polner. Look at his archive, too, Murray Polner and Tom Woods. Tom, thank you.
Thank you, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com. The best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lourockwell.com. And thanks for listening.